the killer calling from inside. Oh, wait, hold on a second. All right, we made a wrong turn, and Courtney's babysitting, and the killer's inside the house. This is a Wrong Turn podcast. There we go. That was much better.
How are you?
Good, good. Ming is in the background. She's running interference, and she hates this fucking movie. Boom.
Well, yeah, I agree with her.
No
She's
reason
not wrong.
To bury the lead.
No reason.
I'm going to, before we start, I'm just going to preface with, I apologize. My sinuses are crazy, so I'm going to sound deeper than I usually do. Me and the dog both have sinus problems, and our allergies are going crazy right now.
Aww.
But Ming is doing great. She is 23 weeks pregnant. And we
You're
are expecting.
Announcing it.
Oh, well, yeah. Sorry. I mean, it's fine. Yeah, yeah. Which almost at 6 months, and
yay!
Eventually, hopefully, I never have to feel the anxieties that the parents feel in this fucking movie. You know, with babysitting and leaving your kid with a stranger. But from what I'm told, for the next 20 to 25 years, I'm never going to stop worrying. But it was a nice. But Ming says it was a nice house at the movie. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're gonna get into it because that's my favorite part of the whole movie is the house.
And we're burying the lead again. That's right. Today we are doing.
But yes. Side note, real quick. Congrats, Edgar and Ming. I'm sorry, I didn't know when you guys were gonna announce it on the podcast because obviously I can't say anything.
I don't know if we already did. I don't know if we already talked about Ming being pregnant.
I don't. Think if we did, it slipped in.
We have our first goblin in the oven.
In the oven. Mm-hmm. Mom and dad to be this year. Cannot wait.
Yeah. Before we start, you seen anything, Courtney?
I did actually. I am trying to do better just on my own because I'm bad sometimes. I get a little I get overwhelmed with how much content there is out there. And so I tend to revert back to just some my old favorites, but I did watch, it's called The Sadness.
Ooh, I've never heard of it. No, 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 please elaborate.
Okay, so it is like a pandemic zombie type of movie. It came out in 2021. It's based in Taiwan.
Oh, maybe I have heard of this.
And it might be connected kind of to to Busan? Do you remember that one?
I know that movie, yeah.
Or maybe the same universe. But anyway, so it is I went into it thinking like, okay, zombie flick, you know. But this one is once you get turned into a zombie, you become like a sadistic, insane, like you're a zombie, but you're also capable of doing really sadistic shit. And they go places that you don't think they were gonna go. And it's brutal. It is brutal. Wait,
so it's So like the zombies have like consciousness and like are like have motive other than like brains?
Yes, they do have motive. However, they're not like they're not human anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're not the person anymore. Like so it's bizarre because they are zombies. Like of course they want to eat your brains and they act as if zombies, but they have a somewhat of an intelligence that like a lot it's done well though. I know maybe I'm not describing it that great, but they just, when I say they take you to places that you didn't think they would go, you're just kind of like, Oh, like it's brutal, but I did enjoy it.
Okay.
Like I watched the whole thing, sat there, stared at it. And I was like, wow, I just wasn't expecting it. Cause again, I thought it was okay. Zombies. I can handle zombies. But it was cool, though. I liked the different take on it. It's nice. Very sad. So it being called The Sadness.
Appropriate.
Like, it's like appropriate. I know there's, like, it's fucked up.
I know there's an international movie called The Wailing. And, like, I hear it's it's messed up, or here it's pretty good. Like, it's funny how those things are interchangeable. Like, it's fucked up, it's amazing. Yeah, especially when we're talking about horror movies, how those words are interchangeable. It's layered, but yeah,
like, it was fucking brutal and gory.
Okay, cool. I'll definitely check it out if I see it come up. Where'd you see it on?
I did, because I was house sitting this past weekend.
Oh, you were babysitting? You were house sitting a house?
I was. I was house sitting dogs. Just like, it's crazy.
No, just like Camilla Bell in this fucking movie.
Yeah, just like, exactly. So they had like some special like features, you know, like, so it was on MGM Plus, I think. So one that I don't typically have access to.
No, nobody has that. Who the fuck has MGM Plus?
These guys did, just because he was like, oh, it just was part of this package that they had. I was like, all right, whatever. So that's like one of the perks of when I do dog sit for people, like, and if they have like the special channels.
It sounded dirty.
Well, I can watch porn anytime I want. Like, this is
you have the internet. You don't need special channels.
Exactly. I'm like, this is exciting when, like, because you and I talk about this all the time, where we find our horror movies to watch, and it's so hard to get like Showtime or MGM or what are some other like random ones. Whenever we're trying to look for movies, and it's always on some really like obscure one, and we're like, well, too bad we can't watch that. Or because we try to do the best we can, you guys. We sometimes we rent the movies, but most of the time we are looking for where the free ones are at, or already the ones that we already pay for.
100%. We are a DIY operation, and we are trying to cut costs wherever we can to keep ourselves afloat, especially in real life horror, this economy. So if we can not pay for something right now, it's, you know, especially with a prize gem like A Stranger Calls 2006, I would have been so fucking pissed if I had paid $3 for this, you know.
If I would have had rented it, I would have been mad. And it already made me mad to go back onto HBO Max and have to press watch again.
Oh yeah, same. I watched this. I watched it once without any sound, and I watched it again with the sound on, and I'm like, fuck, I gotta do this again.
I know. I was like, god damn it, HBO's gonna think I like this movie.
Falsely advertised as a 50% on Rotten Tomatoes, I think. You know, like,
what?
I think it
is. The original, maybe.
I think it is a, what do we got here? 5.1 out of 10, I think, on Google users or IMDb or whatever the fuck.
It's half?
Yeah, half, which is our.
I know.
70% of Google users like this. Fuck that noise. All right, but wait, hold on. Before we get there, saw a couple things.
Yes, you go.
We saw, me and Ming saw Abigail. She'd been really, really wanting to see that. A fun time. Abigail was great. I like movies that know what they are and not trying to be too serious, and we're just there for a good time rather than a deep time. Ming, any criticisms on Abigail? It was good. It was decent. You know, fun time at the movies, 100%.
Okay.
She had a couple of things to say towards the end, but you know, you can't be, you know what it was, and you know it wasn't going to be 100% across the board from the beginning, so that's fine. We saw our recommendations on TikTok. Please follow us on TikTok. Shameless plug. The recommendation for House, the Japanese movie from, I think it was like the late 70s. Love it. Fucking just as bonkers the second time around as I saw it the first time. It's on HBO Max. Super, super fun. Fucking bizarre ass movie. And we also saw last night, I think I saw Tarot. Remember that? On our list of awful. Don't fucking waste your
time. Okay, I was gonna, you know, I'm still gonna watch it, but that's all I've been reading, that it just sucks, and that makes me sad.
I didn't even know it came out. I think it just went straight to streaming. Don't worry about where I watched it. Just,
okay,
you know, worry about where you're gonna watch it. The only thing I could say about it is that they spent a lot of money on the effects. Practical effects for the costumes were fucking great. Story lacked. The dialogue of the characters lacked a lot. I mean, I get it. The guy from the Spider-Man movies, like, maybe he was the highest paid actor on there. But, you know, you just feel like he's the same character in everything.
I did hear, not to cut you off, sorry, go ahead.
Go for it.
Oh, it was just that the artist who designed the creatures, I believe, on the tarot cards, or I believe he does tarot and he designed the tarot cards for the movie. I feel like there's been a lot of people, a lot of fans, like, speaking very highly of him, being like, man, it sucks that it was this movie, but this guy is an amazing dude, I guess. That's what I've heard.
Oh, well, maybe. The art was fine for the tarot cards. The costumes were great. Costumes, the practical effects, even the special effects, I thought were really, really well done. Like, they spent money on this movie. I just would have wished they would have spent money on a script. Hey-o!
Hey.
Bow, bow, bow. That's what we call Edgar's Burn Corner. Boom. We're on another one today.
I will see it eventually when it gets to some platform where I can watch it. But yeah, I'm not paying for that shit. Everyone says it sucks. And now that you're saying it, I truly believe it.
I mean, you know, maybe great gateway horror for young kids, you know, like I'm sure it'd be fine for, you know, 15, you know, year olds. Much like this movie, which we're going to segue into right now. Perfect.
This movie is like a slumber party movie.
I'll give you that. Like if you are a teenager in 2006, which I was not, then this is probably like the perfect thriller / horror movie for that demographic, with very little kills and a lot of like tension, you know, which 100%, which might have been the reason that this movie did well. I think it had a budget of, I think, like, what, $15 million? And it did a box office sales of $67.1 million. So it made its money back. And they had, right here. And they had plans for a sequel, which I am surprised they never did, like, a fucking straight-to-video sequel. Because maybe it would have been a fucking amazing. Because it had all the elements for it. And it had
I'm
plot.
I'm surprised, too.
Yeah. There's so many other things that get sequels that are straight to fucking... The House on Haunted Hill has a
sequel.
Exactly. Yeah. Or The Haunting of Hill House, whichever one we were talking about that we did.
Yeah. It was... we did The House on a Hill, and then they had another one a couple years later. Like you said, straight to video. Why didn't they do that for this? I don't know, because it made its money. So, and you could have, mustered up something. You know, who knows? But
all right. So, like I was saying before, we're all over the place right now. But like I said, we're doing Stranger Calls 2006, and like I said, IMDb 5.1, 9% on Rotten Tomatoes. That is accurate. I thought it was like a 34 for some reason.
Okay, good. 9% on Rotten Tomatoes is yes, I agree.
27 on Metacritic and 70% on Google users for some reason. I don't get that.
Interesting. Usually we side with the Google.
Yeah, you're right.
Not this time.
Let's, I guess, start at the beginning. Courtney.
The first 5 minutes of this movie are the only thing really worth watching.
All right. And we can't talk about this movie without, like, I mean, I guess this cold opening is very similar to, I guess, the original movie. But then the original movie is so much more than what this movie is.
Yeah.
The 2006 version basically expanded on the first 20 minutes of the original, right? They're like, oh, yeah, let's take which is what everybody remembers from the, I think, the 1979 version. Everybody remembers the 1979 version. They remember the first 20 minutes because it's like the most fucking gripping. And then it's a long, slow burn after that about how the maniac is caught, maniac breaks free, and then how he's just like roaming the fucking streets. And then he finds the babysitter years later and he stalks her again, and then stuff ensues or whatever. And it's a weird fucking movie after that. After the first 20 minutes, it's a fucking weird one. And I could see there is a story there that they easily could have played with. if they wanted to do that, or if they wanted to do that for the fucking sequel. But
yeah,
which I thought that was the rumor for. The rumor was that they were going to try and reintroduce the same character, the Camilla Bell's character in the sequel. And she was going to be older and she's going to have kids and the killer's going to come back, you know, and stalk her again or whatnot. Easy premise, even if you would have changed out the fucking actress, you know?
Which would have been my first thing. New actress.
Zing. Tell me how you feel about it, Courtney.
Look, she's pretty. Yeah. But I feel like I've seen more charisma from like a wet cardboard box.
Damn. Courtney's going hard right now, Ming.
I was like, she's beautiful. Like, she's a beautiful girl. I'm not knocking her there. But I was like, what? Like, can you give me anything?
Like, so we have Jill Johnson played by Camilla Bell, she'd been acting since she was like a little kid.
I did look up her credits because I was just interested. I was like, what else can this girl do? And she's still working. Good for her.
Yeah, but she's again, like Hallmark movies and like TV and stuff like that.
I'm like, that's Hallmark. Yeah, cool. I mean, yeah, she just felt very boring to go along with this very boring movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. You're right. I guess it's hard to carry an entire movie, especially when there isn't much fucking dialogue. I could see her trying to like fill in the scenes with a lot of gestures and you know, kind of like motions and stuff like that. But you know, when you just have to act scared for the entire fucking movie. I mean, like, what the fuck?
No, I was just listening. I was trying to listen to what you were gonna say because I have another name for this movie, and it's The Cyber House Rules.
The what?
The Cyber House Rules. That's a Simpsons joke. Not a good one. Because the house is its own character.
Yeah.
Like you have Camilla or Camille or Camilla. And Jill. Or Jill. Mm-hmm. And then it's the house. So I did enjoy her kind of exploring the house, and even though we did get a lot of like the fake scares, and there's a whole long boring thing of just her in the house, like looking around, but I did enjoy looking at the house, I guess I should say.
Yeah, with the house they built for this movie. Originally, they had planned, they had scoped out this area. I forgot. It's not even important because I'm not even gonna write any of this stuff down anymore. But they originally had planned to like rent out a house like they do, and they were going to rent out the adjacent houses, but they were like, this is going to get expensive, and they were like, well, it'd just be cheaper to build a set. So they built this whole fucking place so fast that like when they were going to shoot, like the paint was still wet on the walls. All right, so let's go down to the cast, and this is a loose cast because like you said, Camilla Bell's character, Jill Johnson, is 90% of this fucking movie, mm-hmm. and everybody else 10%, 5%, whatever the fuck. We have, and Barry in the lead, there's like, you know, decent names in this fucking movie. We have Clark Gregg, who plays her dad, Agent motherfucking Coulson from the Marvel movies. Tessa Thompson's in this movie for like 10 seconds. Fucking Valkyrie from the Marvel movie. And Katie Cassidy, who plays her best friend, who Jill Johnson has a conflict with because, you know, her best friend Tiffany kissed her boyfriend I mean, she did you a favor. If you look at Bobby, no, he's not a keeper.
You know? Dude, she,
Katie Cassidy was also at this time in two other remakes, which I'm like, kind of like an unglorified scream queen, because she was in the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, and she's also in the, and then she did a bunch of CW stuff. So making her, so apparently I have this running joke where basically everybody in Hollywood's going to be in a Marvel movie. It's just a matter of time. So
yeah, so, I believe you.
So the fact that like, oh, the Black Christmas remake, there we go. The same year.
Okay. That's right. Because when I was doing my research, they mentioned these two because they came out around the same time.
Fun fact, the original movie, When a Stranger Calls, 1979, was based off of supported news reports about how a babysitter was stalked, or about how folklore about a babysitter being stalked by a person in the house and the kids and whatnot. But this story was also the impetus for the original Black Christmas. So the fact that Katie Cassidy was in both remakes, full circle.
Hey, you know? I like that.
No, keep going down the cast. A bunch of people that aren't in this fucking movie. There's like 20 people that aren't really in this movie that's on this list of fucking characters. The only other person that I am going to mention that is of note is Tommy Flanagan of Sons of Anarchy fame and all around general bad guy in every movie because of the, you know, being typecasted as looking at like a mean motherfucker who plays our stranger. And Lance Hendrickson, who plays the voice of the stranger.
Because they are different, not the same.
Yeah, Lance Hendrickson is fucking, I mean, they're both great, but it's, I kind of do love it how they picked both two great genre guys to play one character. That's great.
Yeah. No,
point for, 1 point for that. 100
1 point that you picked scary, you did pick scary dudes to be the stranger.
Yeah.
Who has pick, like, what's his motive? We don't know.
Murdering
young girls.
He's supposed to be a maniac, right? You know?
Right. I remember the first 5 minutes of this because it was that is what intrigued me the most. That like the off camera of someone getting murdered and the acting, like the from the cop seeing this, like, again, we don't see anything. We just get the reactions of like the police. And you see like the body bags that, like, I remember that so vividly, being like, this looks cool. And oh, I remember what I was going to say, because we just did Urban Legend recently, and it wasn't like the caller inside the house kind of thing also an urban legend.
Yeah. 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 Oh, that was like, that was another reason we were kind of doing this, because we had just recorded Urban Legend, and this is just like a whole movie based on an urban legend. Right?
Yeah. Which like is one specifically. Yeah,
which is totally what you were going to do. And when I was watching this, and I was just like, man, wouldn't it be cool if there was like a killer who like, you know, like he doesn't have any motives because everything he does just based off a different urban legend. I'm like, oh, wait, never mind. Like, I was like, that movie's already done. Oh, shit.
You're like, but we love the concept of urban legend. It's like that's such a fun movie. It just, you know, I missed the mark a little bit.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, yeah, it's already done.
You're like, oh, wait, there's a guy in a parka. There he is.
but see, it's weird because like the first five minutes of this movie doesn't even have characters, but it's just ADR over like B-roll, right?
Yes.
We have this one mom like calling for her kids, but it's weird though because it's like a different house that the murder ends up. You know, like we see this neighborhood, we see a bunch of kids, and like you said, this maniac, the stranger, apparently he doesn't care like whether it's a neighborhood or where it's out a house out in the middle of nowhere where he can easily get away with something, right? Because this is like in a crowded neighborhood. There is a carnival going on down the street, and then we get more B-roll
down
shots.
The street in their backyard. There's a carnival in their backyard.
It seems like it's in their backyard. I feel like they
must be just so used to this carnival. Sorry, because the second I saw this, I was like, that carnival is so fucking close to their house. Is it just there for the weekend, or is this normal?
Yeah, it has to be. It has to be like once in a while kind of a deal.
Yeah, because I'd be pissed. I'd be like, that house would have been so cheap.
So then we get ADR of the stranger calling, somebody picking up, bothering some babysitter. And then we cut to a different house. That's like the front of the house and the back of the house are two completely different.
Yes.
This is why it's thrown off. And then
I'm glad you caught it too, because I was like, what?
The babysitter calls the cops, and then it cuts to the next morning, and I think we hear some screams or whatever. And then it's just like you said, it is a scene where the police are just kind of investigating the scene, and we find out that there is the killer used no weapons, so essentially had just murdered or disassembled these
dismembered children. So babysitter and children with his hand, which is morbid.
Oh, that's great though. That's
yeah, which is, I was like, oh, scary.
And, You don't need to see it to be like how horrific.
I don't want to see dead kids. I don't.
No. But it's a great rule to break, especially for a PG-13 movie where it's just like, yeah, the kids are going to get it. And then we cut to Jill Johnson, Camilla Bell in high school, just fucking running her heart out. And I'm like, this, that's a pretty dope high school if the track is like on like its own floor by itself. That was kind of cool. And then she's just can't concentrate because her boyfriend's, you know, in the level below cheating playing basketball, on cheating on her. But it was just a kiss, Jill. You know,
Jill.
And I wish like the running would have been more of a thing, like the whole like she's an athlete, so she could like really, because there's barely also any running in this fucking movie. After this, I feel like that was. Would have, you know, they do this, right? Like if the protagonist is really good at something, that shit comes into play later in the movie because so they can, you know, get away from fucking said killer.
Right. You would want to be like, oh, she's a track star. So she fucking outruns away from the shit. Yeah, like outruns, like, guy. And her stamina is like so high that she can just like get away from this killer. And that's how she escapes. And that's not really what happens. It's never really addressed again.
Yeah. I mean, one scene maybe, but that's it. But she doesn't even get away, so she's not that good.
It would have been if she would have been swimming. Maybe she was a swimmer. Yeah. I don't know.
And had to swim across the lake, you know, to save the kids. Yeah.
But there's also that short scene where she's like in the koi pond pool in the house. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe if she had like fucking strong ass legs and she had to kick this fucking guy in the face, maybe that would have been something, you know. But whatever. So she just can't concentrate. Her coach is really giving her a hard time. She got 25 seconds on the clock when she knows she can do 24, you know. And then we cut to she's in the hall and she apparently her phone doesn't work because her dad cut off her phone line because she went over the minutes, apparently.
Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
Do you remember minutes? Yeah, she went over her minutes by 800 minutes. That's a big ass fucking phone bill, which she was just talking to her boyfriend the whole time. We're assuming.
Yeah, boyfriend or fighting with her boyfriend. That's a long fight.
Yeah. Which is but that's the whole idea here is that now she has to babysit. She can't hang out with her friends or anything or see her boyfriend because she went over her minutes.
She can't go. Yeah, she can't hang out. She's not hanging out with her boyfriend because she's breaking up with him. She can't hang out with her friends at the bonfire that's happening tonight. And she got her car taken away and she got her phone taken away, which is a good setup. You cut off her resources, you know, and it's just sitting laid in there really quickly by Agent Coulson as he's driving her up because she's got to make money to pay for this big ass fucking phone bill.
Fair. I mean, exactly. He's like, but.
And there's this whole other thing, too, about like her being responsible and, you know, not being responsible, which also doesn't come to play later. Like,
he gives her this whole speech in the car right before he drops her off.
Yeah, exactly. Which is,
you know, like about integrity, like do the right thing, even when no one's looking.
I guess maybe that comes. Is that supposed to come into play where she checks on the livelihood of these fucking children that are in her care? Like, were you ever in doubt that she wasn't going to just, like, that would have been so fucked up. She just dips out on these fucking
kids. She just leaves. Yeah, just like, I was scared.
Yeah, 100%. So then she gets dropped off at the Mandrakis house, played by two actors that are also barely in this fucking movie. And we're not even going to mention their names. Yeah, the parents.
This fucking house.
It's a nice house, which it also seems smaller and smaller the more I look at it because, you know, like it's a set. It looks way bigger on the outside.
It really does. And the level of rich that they are.
Yeah.
Like, or there's what's the word for like the bird area they have in the middle atrium with the koi pond? Atrium. There we go.
Yeah. Do you not have an atrium in your koi pond? Like,
oh, sorry. I'm working on it. I'm just shy of a few thousand before I can get my atrium.
our atrium is nice.
You know? Our atrium. Mishi loves it. She likes to look at the birds.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, just that alone, like that centerpiece to have like a pond. I mean, you know, it's funny though, because actually a lot of houses in South America and I think in Spain, like have that sort of like villa aesthetic, but it's not enclosed.
Right.
But there is a...
Which, yes, I do love that idea. But in this house, it is enclosed. And there's like multiple doors.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yes. It's got like one door, one main door, the atrium. And it's got like crazy fucking trees, got a koi pond, it's got a bridge, you know, and it's got these great little, I guess, canaries, little birds.
Little, yeah. Yeah. Yellow canaries.
Yellow canaries. Yeah. So the Mandrakes give Jill the fucking lowdown. You know, they're like, here are the numbers. Here's the house. Here's the alarm. This is our in-house
maid.
Which is like, which they also let you know that that sometimes she leaves because her mother is sick. And that's right. She's not taking care of the kids tonight because she might have to leave. Which is like, yes. Oh, okay. Because I'm like, what? You trust this lady to clean your house, but you don't trust this lady to watch your fucking kids? Racist. Also racist because she is stereotypically Hispanic and they call her Rosa. That's fucked up. Scream gems? That's fucked up.
It really is.
I don't even think Rosa gets a credit in this fucking movie.
She should. She feeds. She's out there feeding the fucking fish and the birds.
Yeah. Oh, her real name was Rosine Ace. Rosine Ace.
Oh, I was gonna say, is her real name Rosa?
No, that's Rosine.
Yeah.
That's not the actress's name. That's her real name. That's her real name. Yeah, that was close. Yeah.
Oh, she was actually the maid on set. So they were like, "You can be in it." Oh, that's awful. Another thing, they have weird automatic censored lights that like dim every single time you leave a room and like come on. It would drive me crazy. But no, she does mention it right away. Like, you'll get used to it.
As a, you know, as like taking care of my mother's house, as a person who pays the electricity, that's going to save you so much money.
You're right. I mean,
that's just me coming into my old age, 100%, or my middle age.
No, but you are 100% right, and you would get used to it. But I would drive me, like, just watching this movie, I was like, I would be so annoyed. And then they also make a little note as they have a guest house across the lake, and the mom says, oh, yeah, we have the son in college from, like, the first marriage, whatever the dad says, and he comes home sometimes, but by the way, he never lets them know. So, like... Yeah. Gives you that little heads up that there might be something going on over there.
Yeah, so there might be somebody there. The also fucked up about the censored lights, none of the censored lights are in either the closet or the maid's closet or the maid's room. Fucked up.
Because she's the maid. But you're right.
Fucked up.
They're like, she's our live-in maid, but she doesn't get any of the luxuries of the house.
Yeah. So it is the censored lights is a decent setup for something that, for like a false scare that happens a little bit later, which is like the censored lights just turn on and off when nobody is there. So you assume it's the killer, which is great. You know,
yes.
It's great. For that setup alone,
it's a good spook. Yeah.
Except, and then like when it happens later, we're like, all right, whatever. It happens again later during the big chase scene, but she doesn't do anything, and it makes you so fucking aggravated.
She doesn't do a lot of things.
Yeah. All right. So let's go back to the Mandrakeses are giving her the fucking The Mandrakeses are giving her the fucking rundown, and they say goodbye. They give her the alarm code. And then they walk out, and then she is by herself. And I wanted to say that's like pretty much the setup in the like the end of the beginning, except for like maybe the first phone call, I think, where we get from the killer.
Just about the alarm system. I don't know how familiar you are with them, but you always activate the alarm like before you go to bed, because most of them are censored. Like, they would know that you're moving around the house, and then it would knock the alarm. And so when this family leaves, the dad sets the alarm even though she's already in there. That kind of confused me, but then I was like, maybe this is just a new fancy rich person alarm that I don't know anything about.
Not all alarms have sensors inside. Like, some alarms have sensors on the windows only and the doors, so if anything is open or closed, this sets off the alarm. Maybe you could, maybe you, I'm sure you could do one where it does have the sensors and just turn off the sensors inside, right? I'm sure technology has gone that far where,
yeah, I mean, this is 2006, but I was only thinking in my experience of like being in really nice homes like that, and like when you're told to set alarms, like it was like, oh yeah, set the alarm before you go to bed. And it's like, okay, you know, but
yeah, I'm sure the dad, Dr. Mandrakis, was just like, I'm gonna set the alarm. There's no reason for you to leave the house, pretty much. Like,
yeah,
you know,
don't you go anywhere. Again, I'm just probably overthinking it. I was just bored.
Oh no, I overthought it too, because I'm gonna get to it, trust me. No, okay, you are right, but I will talk about it later. No, you are not wrong, 100%.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of, this is like our first fucking lull in the fucking movie, like after they fucking leave and like nothing fucking happens. And it's just quiet. Yeah. And it, like you said, it's just her discovering the house, which they don't even do good of a job of it, because I think she only walks into the living room and the bedroom.
Yeah. And she tries on like some of the nice jewelry and like looks at some of the nice clothes and like goes into the bathroom. Like it's just like, it's boring. And I don't know.
If you're trying to establish that like it is boring being a teenager and babysitting when like there's nothing to do, yeah, maybe, yeah, you laid that on pretty well. And then I wanted to get at minute 20 is when we get our first call, and I think it's some heavy breathing.
Yeah,
and that's our stranger who's out. Also, we forgot to mention that this is currently 125 miles from the previous murder.
Right.
So the killer is just, like I said, willy-nilly, no rhyme or reason to anything he's doing. He's just looking for a next victim.
Yeah, and it's only 125 miles, like the next town over, and this is like a few days after, right? Or like the week after? Like, yeah, it's very close.
Yeah, I don't think it's really mentioned like how close it was. But like in the original, there's like the whole thing with like the cop who investigated the original killing and how he knows that the killer got out of the insane asylum and how he's following him and how he goes back to all the cops from the original murder and how the cops are just fucking scared for their fucking kids because they know how horrific that scene was and how this guy is on the fucking loose. And the guy is unhinged in the original. Like he's not menacing. He's just like sad, depressed, alone, and like scared. And he's just like, he's not acting crazy. He's just so quietly unhinged the entire fucking time, which is fucking great, which would have been nice. But like letting us know that it's 125 miles and giving us the cops in this fucking beginning gives us fucking nothing. Sorry. Going back to the movie.
No, I like that you said that, because no one in this film seems to have any sort of anxiety about this killer being on the loose.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like she's like, yeah, I'm just babysitting tonight, guys, whatever. I'm like, was no one talking about what has just happened?
Like, oh, it would have been great if she turned on the TV and would have been like a news report about a killer still on the loose because of murder, you know, a state away.
Or maybe there's just like, oh, it's such a rich, fancy house and there's an alarm system. She's good. Like,
I mean, yeah, you could, there's things to say about like the uber rich and how they believe they are untouchable. And,
like a purge house.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's always cracks.
Oh, I was going to say, no, because we're just jumping here into the phone calls again, because this movie is called When a Stranger Calls. You mentioned it before we started recording, but there isn't an exact number about how many calls this chick gets.
37 rings.
Okay.
In the total of this movie is a number that I made up for the statistic.
62. She gets 62 calls.
Yeah. 62 rings.
And sometimes. Calls, 62 rings. And she just stares at the phone most of the time and is like, should I answer that? No one in the history of babysitting has been called that much.
I mean, that's part of it. Which even like the harassing isn't even that much.
No.
Like I would have understood if she got called like every 5 minutes. That would have fucking maybe driven her crazy. That's an element they could have played into, like really kind of fucking with her. But like, that's not, like you said, I guess it's just like the acting in her, like it's not conveyed very well. You know, it just lacks. It misses the mark a little bit.
And I know I gave her a hard time at the beginning of this, and I'm going to continue to give her a hard time. She bores me.
That's fine. You know, I thought she was going to be a really big deal back in the day, you know?
Yeah, this was a big movie for her.
She didn't want to originally do it. They were originally thinking of Rachel Evan Woods from Westworld.
Oh, yeah.
And then she had turned it down. And then they got with Camilla Belt, but she'd actually turned it down and they convinced her to do it when the director or the writer was like, going to say that was going to be a more of a psychological thriller, which, like I said, if you really make her go fucking crazy, you know, with just constantly calling her, you know, she's going to want to like pull out the fucking phone. Right. But there's another phone in the house and she can't fucking find it. And it's just fucking ringing, but she doesn't want to wake up the kids, you know, like. Also, how do these kids not fucking wake up with how many times this fucking phone rings in this fucking house? Never mind. Sorry. Also, let's go talk about the director for a second. Simon West.
Simon.
He did some pretty generic fucking big fucking movies, though.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he did motherfucking Con Air. Like, he is an action director, which he said he went a little tame with this for the PG-13 already. Like, he did some pretty big movies in the 90s and early 2000s. So like,
interesting.
Yeah, he did.
As far as his directing in this film, mediocre.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's not bad. It's just like, okay. Yeah, I could do it.
Yeah, exactly. 100, yeah, don't disagree with that at all. So going back to the phone calls, minute 27, we have the alarm going off, which, if you rewatch this movie and you kind of want to like play the game of like when the killer comes into the house and what happens.
All right, I want to play this game.
You know, like I think minute 27 is when the killer sneaks in because the alarm goes off.
Okay.
Right before this, we had seen Jill come across Rosa in the atrium feeding the birds. And then after this, Rosa's gone and the food is spilled. But then, and then she can't find Rosa ever again. So she assumes that
Rosa
had set off the alarm and she went to go take care of her sick mother.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Correct.
And then you could sort of, then it kind of falls apart after this.
They did, but like right after the scene you explained and like the phone calls, because it's, you know, the alarm company is like checking in on them and like, we have to confirm your identity. There is, as far as directing goes, a couple good shots of the statues in the background of her that make it look like if there was a person, like
you
a,
noticed
a
that me too.
I enjoyed that. I liked that. I was like, okay, here we go. A little spooky, a little edgy. And that's why I want to agree with you where this, I do believe this is when the killer has entered the house. Like they're giving it to you a little bit here.
No, I completely 100% think, but he calls before this, I guess, just to establish, just to find out that I guess there is a babysitter there. And this is when I think like the killer's just on the outside, the stranger's just on the like he's inside the house listening in on her, just trying to get as much information as possible.
Yeah, I think so.
So now we're like in act two. And then this is, see, but she comes across like the very disturbing scene of like the bird food like tipped over and
just
all the
tipped
just
over.
Eating. It goes right back to just fucking eating shit on the couch.
Also, she takes the piece of the piece of paper that has the alarm code on it because she'd used it, and then puts it right on top of like the little alarm system for anyone to see. Like,
oh, is that what happened? Oh, I missed that.
Smart girl. It's like, what are you doing? But anyway, you're right. She goes, and to think that perhaps maybe it was Rosa, but it is. I would be concerned with the food tipped over and the door ajar from the atrium. And then she's like, Rosa, Rosa, and then nothing. I would have investigated a little bit more. And I would have told the parents, like, hey, I don't know what happened to Rosa, but I saw this.
Oh, yeah. And they blame it on Rosa, too. Be like, I don't know how many times you told Rosa that alarm code because she keeps setting it off. So then, like, the killer also knows, like, it's probably set off the alarm code as many times as he wants. And then just blame it on fucking Rosa, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then like here after this is where you get all those false scares, not even jump scares. Yeah. It would have been nice.
They're
if
not
they
even jump scares. No, there's just a billion of random things happening in the house. So that's why I called it the cyber house rules. The house just like, starts doing things.
Like she's sitting on the couch at one point and then the light from the bedroom turns on, which is great because then you're like, oh shit, you know? And then she walks into the room and maybe the killer was right there just fucking waiting for her. That would have been fucking great, you know? And mm-hmm. like you said, the whole thing with the statues, loved it because I had to replay those scenes because like, wait, is that him? And there is one scene, especially towards the end, where she's being chased by the killer and I thought it was him in the background, but it's just another statue and the whole camera yeah. moving that makes it look like the statue's moving for a second. And I was just like, fuck, because that would have been also really, really good if you saw the killer in fucking corners of the fucking scenes, but they don't give
yes. Simon, it was on the tip of your tongue, dude. Yeah, you could have done it that way. Like you had the house and you had all these statues. Use it. Like use this house for the character for what it is. Like, and he did. Like I agree with you 100% on the placement of these statues because they're all over the house. They're not just in the yard. There's that like spooky Jesus looking one on the stairs.
Oh, also we forgot to mention that she was instructed specifically not to wake up the children because the children are recovering from a flu and they've had a hard time sleeping and that she should just leave them alone for the duration of the night, which is also like, okay, I guess. So
don't even look at them.
Don't even look at these. Don't even check on these kids.
I would have peeked as a babysitter. I would have just peeked and been like, hey, are they sleeping? All right, cool. They're in their beds. Awesome. I don't know. That would have been me. I'd have just been like, all right. You know, like because I would have had some weird irrational fear that I'd lost them if I just imagined that they weren't there. Or like, don't talk to them.
Yeah, because like, especially like watching, like not hearing that, like say if you just like came across this movie like on TV and you had missed that one part, then you'd be like, where the fuck are these fucking kids? You know? But like, and also yeah. like these kids went to sleep like at 5 p.m. Like these kids are going to be up all fucking night.
And how do you not know that they could be fucking with you? They're kids.
Oh, that also would have been really good. Thank you.
Like
if they had gotten up and played pranks on her.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. As a babysitter, an aunt, I like of all these things that I am, like at some point I would have been like, you know what? I better go check on these little shits because funky things are happening.
Yeah. So then between the alarm going off around minute 27 and like, you know, her minute 40. I'm sorry. I'm like going through it this way. This is the way.
No,
I broke it up.
Please go
notes.
Right ahead. There's we really get, we get her. There's being, not much.
Yeah. We get her being called again by the killer a couple more times. Then her being prank called by her boyfriend's friends and mm-hmm. her trying to reach out to anybody. But everybody's at the bonfire. So then she can't get good reception, you know? And then we also get a couple more false scares. And then that's where
there's a cat.
Yeah, we get the cat false scare. And then where we get her where she goes into the kitchen. And this is where she starts to arm up. She's like, she starts to like really feel that there's something wrong inside the house. So she gets a fire poker and she starts walking around looking for Rosa. And she gets into the kitchen. And that's where she comes across her friend, Katie Cassidy, playing Tiffany. Who,
yes.
And then they have this whole fucking thing, which also like, I mean, you get it. Jill's trying to be responsible. I mean, Tiffany's just trying to get drunk. Maybe a horror rule, cardinal sin that she's trying to break, but she doesn't actually break it.
Yeah, I think for her, just a wrong place, wrong time.
Oh, she made a wrong turn.
Yeah, she made a wrong turn going to that fucking house.
Yeah. And see, this is where I get kind of confused because Tiffany comes over. They make up sort of, you know, about like, oh, you know, you
kiss
my boyfriend.
And
she's like, well, you owed it to me because you kind of stole him away from me back, like 2 years ago or 4 years ago or whatever. Loose reasoning, you know. Tiffany says that they'll talk later. She goes to her Matrix, which is a 2006 Matrix, which was hot off the car line back then. You know, and we know this is a work of fiction because this Matrix would have started immediately, but for the purposes of
exactly.
movies,
exactly,
because Toyotas don't fail.
Well, if Ming can say anything, that she had a Matrix and that baby lasted forever.
That Matrix
she got,
just died.
Just she had like over 300,000 miles on that thing.
Ming had a 2004 Matrix and it lasted to 2024 only because we put it down, not because it died on her.
It, I mean, I don't think she had much longer in her, but damn, that's a car. Like, so, that's right. I 100% believe you guys. Whereas, like, if this, her car didn't fucking start, come on, that's a Matrix.
That's a Matrix. Yeah, yeah. So Tiffany's having a hard time turning on her car. But this whole scene with Tiffany and the branch breaking, it's some nice tension, you know, like,
yeah.
But if I was Tiffany, I would have called up Jill from outside the house and be like, look, I'm trying to leave. You want to help me take this branch out of the driveway?
Yeah, because it's a big branch. Like, I would have done the same thing. I'd have been like, yeah, just that. Can you help me, please? I'll leave. Like,
I mean, it is a kind of a nicey because Tiffany's looking at the lock button, like whether she should go outside because she knows something's going
on. I know. Like, what is she scared of?
It's one of those things which I think, like, you can sort of, it's kind of like a real life horror where you can sort of feel somebody looking at you.
Yes.
Right.
And it's a big house, like, in the middle of nowhere. So I don't know. It's stormy. It's windy.
Like, there's nothing there. There's nothing around, but you can feel somebody looking. Like, which is the same thing that Jill's, I feel like, dealing with. Like, there's nobody here, but she could feel somebody's watching her. And then she gets that assumption confirmed later when the killer calls her, and when he goes to tell her to look at the children, and then she goes to look at the children, he asks her about it, right? Because now he knows exactly what she's doing because he can see her. See, this is the part that gets me a little bit, was the, because before, like, I knew how the killer got into the house, but now I know that, like, Tiffany got in through the house through the garage door.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Mandrakis is left, they lock her in the house, but they leave the garage door open. So what the fuck is that about? It does not make any sense, which we were trying to tell you before.
Yeah.
Tiffany gets murdered outside the house. So I don't know how the killer gets out of the house and gets back inside the
back
house
in.
Without setting off the alarm.
Yeah. There we go. There it was. That's mine too. I was like, I wrote it down. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Do not know.
And then kills Tiffany and drags her back in the house. Doesn't set off the alarm.
Takes her up to the third floor.
Yeah.
Because it's in Rose's bedroom where he lives.
He's quick and he's quiet. You do not know he's in there. I know it's a big house, but dang.
Yeah, how did he get there?
How did he get there?
I only see one.
And then he also killed Rosa really quietly too, because you made it this far, you guys. Sorry, Rosa's dead.
Oh, we already knew Rosa was dead. which is like great, because like if you rewatch it, then you watch these scenes, you know Rose is dead right behind her in the water, which is kind of nice,
which makes sense. So it's like he killed her, boom, water. But with Tiffany, it's like you killed her outside and then you dragged her back in the house.
Like, it would have been nice if it had a replayability and you can make sense of these little things, you know.
But also, these are things we are finding out after a couple watches of this movie.
Too many watches.
Like, this should be what, like, when you see it the first time, you should know these things.
Yeah. Jill's getting more calls, right? And now the killer's using Tiffany's phone. So we know that something happened to Tiffany, obviously. There was also the nice little mislead where the killer's knocking furiously at the door, opens up the door, and there's nobody there. Which I don't know is like to sort of like draw her attention away so that the killer can sneak into the house again with the body. I don't know how.
Yeah.
But whatever.
It's like, whatever.
Also, the front of the house is in the back of the house, which is weird. If you see her walk to the front of the house in the beginning of this movie, she has to walk in front of the house to the deck on the water.
To the deck.
Exactly. Get into the house.
That's the front of the house?
Right, guess.
I'm assuming that's the front of the house and not like a side door, because you almost go through a side door and then you walk a deck, like you're saying, a deck that's on the lake, and then you get to like the front door.
Yeah, weird.
That's confusing. That's too rich for me.
Yeah, it's too rich.
It's just too rich. I can't handle that much rich.
That's fine. All right. And then another like fucking 20 minutes of just like
another 20 minutes of fucking phone calls.
Yeah. Of fucking phone calls, her being silent, Like, I feel like all the tension happens after her, like, friend gets murdered, and then it's just nothing for a while.
It's nothing for a while, and should we just, like, bump to when she actually, like, calls the cops?
I mean, I think she's called the cops, like, once or twice by this point.
Okay, and then there's... And this is before the cops have, like, told her that they're gonna trace the phone call.
She's on the mission to get the...
Stay on the line for 60 seconds.
Yeah, so she's, like, on this mission. She has the side quest of getting the caller, or getting the stalker, or the stranger to be on the phone for about a minute so they can trace the call back, right?
Is that still true technology? Like, you would need someone? I mean, let's go back to 2006. So you would need someone to stay on the line for 60 seconds. That's a whole minute to figure out where they are.
Or now I think, well, I could just ping your location.
Well, now if that person has an iPhone, you boom.
Yeah, they can just,
I know exactly where you are.
Yeah, exactly. Just triangulate you, exactly. I mean, and they're using landlines because her phone was taken away because she went over. They try to do the whole tracing thing after the stranger calls her. Ask her to check on the children. She goes, checks on the children. This is with the first sighting of the children. We see that they are comfortably and perfectly posed to be perfect little angels sleeping in their fucking bed, because nobody sleeps like that with their fucking hands on their fucking chest like little fucking dead children.
Creepy dead kids. And kids then, are the weirdest sleepers.
Yeah, exactly. And then she leaves the room. She goes back downstairs. She gets another call. And then he asks her, how are the kids doing? So we know that the killer's looking at her. That's when she freaks out and she calls the cops. And the cops are played by, or one of the officers is played by David Denham, who is Officer Burroughs, who is most famously known for being the shitty boyfriend in The Office.
In The Office. Yep.
Which we...
Pam's shitty fiance. Worst cops ever, by the way. This fucking... These cops need to be investigated.
I mean, I get it. Eventually, they're saying they can't do a whole lot unless, like, you know, they're actively doing something. But now they send there's somebody outside the windows, and now it's 20 minutes till we can actually get somebody up there, which lets the killer know exactly how much time
he has.
Yeah. You know, to murder these kids, murder these babies, and fucking leave. Because he also could have been just listening in on the phone line.
Exactly. Because this was back in the time when you could just pick up your landline phone and you could listen to whoever was talking on it.
Oh, that would have been super good if you could have, if she could, like, hung up the phone and it doesn't click and then she just hears somebody breathing after the phone lines, then, like, listening in. That would have been also really, really nice.
Because I remember fucking doing that shit, like, when my sister's on the phone and I'd pick up the other line and, like, listen, and then it'd eventually be like, hey. Fuck you.
Yeah. So Jill's on the side quest to get the killer to or the stranger. I keep saying the killer. Killer, stranger, interchangeable.
The stranger, the killer.
Yeah. So she thinks that maybe, possibly, the son is the one that's, like...
Yeah, at the guest house.
In the guest house, making noise inside the house, not realizing that she's also inside the house, right?
Right.
So she calls, picks up the message, but she also sees that there's somebody over there, which was nice because it's kind of like the killer's kind of like leading her on a little bit.
I did like that. Like, because you get the shadowy figure of the person in the guest house after she makes the call.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, like, you know, she was like, she has this little dorky speech. She's like, hello, I'm the babysitter next door. And if you could just come over and wait with me with the police. Like,
which is also really, really nice because she goes, finds out there's nobody there, which is weird because she just saw somebody there.
Yes.
Then the killer calls that line and you're like, yeah, that's how he got the phone line, because he was just there.
Yes.
It's actually really, that's a really nice setup.
I like it. I like those touches. And this is, again, on her acting, we are getting nothing from her. We're getting nothing from her. Mm-hmm. As far as, like, is she concerned? Like, scared? What?
I mean, like, I guess she's acting it, but it's just not coming over, you know?
Perhaps. Now, ooh, there was the one little false scare that I enjoyed the most was when she goes in to, like, to find the cell phone in the purse in Rosa's, right?
Oh,
is that where she was?
She goes,
and then the background is with the hat and the jacket.
Yeah, you think I liked that one for a second, and
I liked that one out of all of these false scares, because there's many.
It definitely fooled me for sure.
Yeah,
But yeah, she, before she checks on the kids, she decides like, well, I'm just going to fucking call Rosa because obviously Rosa's car is still here. So she goes to the kitchen, picks up the phone, calls it, and then decides she can hear Rosa's phone throughout the house. So then she traces it back to the maid closet, which I don't know why she has a maid closet and a person there if Rosa also lives on the third floor.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That's what's very good. So why was Rosa's things in that closet in the main? You know what? Too many questions.
Too many questions.
Yeah. Too many questions for this movie.
I still don't know how the killer's getting in inside and outside of this fucking house, though. Because the killer, I mean, unless maybe the killer was never inside the house after he killed Tiffany, went to the guest house, got a guest key, maybe waited till the babysitter Jill got to that house, went back to the house, snuck in while Jill was in that house looking for the son. Maybe.
But then when did he kill Rosa?
Oh, he killed her. He was already in the house when he set off the alarm. He got in through the garage. Killed
this
Rosa.
Is so complicated.
Killed Rosa in the beginning of the movie and stuffed her body underneath the water. Killed Tiffany, was outside this entire time watching her from the bushes or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when he goes to the guest house, she follows. She thinks somebody's in the guest house, goes to the guest house. And then he maybe got a guest key from inside that house.
Yeah, I get that he went back into the house. Obviously, when she leaves to go to the guest house.
Yeah, maybe.
Again, we're live trying to piece this together because it was him in the guest house.
Yeah, it was him. Yeah.
Yeah, it was totally him.
Because I thought they were going to introduce the son at one point, you know? I also thought the boyfriend was going to come into play. Like, maybe he was just being like, oh, I can't hear Jill. Like, I really got to make up with her. I fucked up. I'm going to go to where she's
at. That would have made for a more interesting movie.
And he comes across her in mid fucking fight, gets his shit fucked up. Jill has to save the day, right? Would have been
great. Right. Add your little high school love quarrel to the mix.
Yeah. But apparently, Brian also didn't give a fuck.
No, he didn't. Well, clearly he didn't. He was cheating. Yeah. He didn't care.
During that whole time Jill's inside the guest house, she gets the call and she's playing into what the killer wants, right? She's like, well, if you're calling me, it means you want to talk. And then she gets, it is a decent setup because she's like, yes, I got the minute of him on the phone. Then she realizes she's on the wrong line and she's talking to herself and a little bit of exposition.
Exactly. And it's like, aw. You know?
Originally,
everyone in this fucking movie is an idiot. Killer, her boyfriend, Tiffany, the parents, everyone is just dumb. And it's fine. It's just the universe of everyone's just dumb.
you know what? I also like, I expect the killer to know that like they could trace his call back in 60 seconds. So he would never be on the phone. Because if like his modus operandi or his like fucking calling card is that he calls the babysitters through that, then he's never going to be on the phone for more than a minute, right?
Exactly, because I guess I'm just going to assume that this is just what he does. Like, he's a maniac. He calls babysitters, like, just kills them from town to town to town to town.
I think in the original folklore, one of the things I had looked up was that he's supposed to, like, every time he calls the babysitter to, like, laugh is because he just murdered one of the children.
So I like that.
So every time he's calling, one kid's already dead, but the babysitter has no fucking idea till the end of the night.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah, that's terrifying.
That's great. Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Something they could have used.
Something they could have used.
But no.
God, Hollywood. Hollywood, why do you do that to us?
You know, I didn't even come across any information about like this getting caught up in production hell, rewrites. I wish this shit would have gotten rewritten.
I wish
this would have gone through like a bunch of different fucking versions, you know?
Right, because you know how we talked about Disturbing Behavior and how many and how that got destroyed and it was not even the movie that it was supposed to be? Like, I wanted to hear some stories about this one. Like, what happened? Like, give me some context of what happened is why you're giving me this boring ass movie.
No, it's exactly what they want.
Like, no, says that this is my vision the whole time.
This is done.
Mediocre. Yeah. Like, you know me. I speak very highly of bad movies, like the bad in a good way. Like, I love camp. I love the silliness. Like, but this is just bad in a boring way. Yeah. Where I don't intend to ever watch it again. Oh, now that I know, I can warn people. I can warn people. I can be like, don't watch that.
The fact that we've been able to draw it out for a minute, an hour and 13 minutes is a fucking godsend right now. So we're just going to jump.
So yeah, you just jump into where the cops finally call her and give her the like lowdown. The call is coming from inside the house, which propels us right into the third act.
So she's in the guest house. She sees a light inside the main house. Assumes it's Rosa. She runs. Oh, look, a little bit of that running that we could have used so easily as a theme for this fucking movie, right? But we yes. find out she's not running from anything because the killer's inside the house. So technically she's running towards the killer.
Yes, she's running to find him.
Yeah, she made a wrong turn towards the killer.
Wrong turn right towards the killer. You're supposed to go the other way.
So she sets the alarm. She's inside the house. She goes to find Rose on the third floor. And then see, there are some interesting things because, like you said, she saw somebody inside the guest house. She goes to the third floor to Rose's bathroom and the shower's on. So you know somebody turned on the fucking shower. And I think that's where she gets another call from the killer where she holds on for another 60 seconds. And that's when the cops call her, tell her that the stranger's calling from inside the house and immediately finds her friend Tiffany.
In Rose's bathroom,
which is a nice setup. The LED screen from the phone lights up Tiffany's dead face.
Yeah.
Not bad.
I don't mind that. That was good. Yeah.
I'm sure she's never going to ever want to hear a fucking phone ring ever again after this fucking.
No, the trauma. And but this is what, back to like everyone being a fucking idiot in this movie and then her not really reacting much. For seeing her dead fucking friend.
Well, no, she loses her shit right now. I think she loses her shit at that moment. She finds Tiffany. It is kind of nice because, like, at this moment, probably like the best acting she does in the movie, because I had to write it down. It was just like she is so afraid of like stepping forward because she doesn't know what's around the corner. Because as soon as the cops tell her the killer's inside the house, the power cuts out. Because I guess he was listening in the entire time. He had to have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a nice little bit. We're going to try to give this movie like its little caveats, right? Where the places they excelled at. Because, like, yeah, she doesn't want to walk down the stairs. Like, it is a really.
And you are correct.
Yeah.
You are correct in terms of her performance.
Her fear is palpable in that movie. I wouldn't want to, like, in a place you don't know, walk around the corner because you don't know. You know somebody's inside the house killing your friends?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give it to you.
Killing the kids you're supposed to be looking after, who you don't know. These people.
And like there is a moment where she's going to go for the door, but then she realizes that there's kids inside the house.
Yes. She's like, oh, I gotta wait. The kids. Yeah.
She looks at the does she look down the stairs and then she looks back towards the kids' room?
Yeah, and she's like, I better go get them. Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah, you better.
Let me see.
They're dumb, too. Better go get them.
And also, like, the kid's room made, like, no, like, I guess it's, like, uber fucking rich. Because.
That's what I'm going off of, is this house is so big that they can't hear anything. Because she does go into the kid's room. And it's a bit alarming at first because they're not in their beds because she looks. And then she goes into another part of their room to check and they're hiding in like their little like play box or something. Now I have the question, Chest. How did the kids know? So did the kids know that there was possibly an intruder in the house or did they wake up? Did they hear something? Did they maybe hear Rosa dying? Like why did they get up and hide in and instinctly hide?
Well, I assume the way I saw it was that, like, so she finds the kids in, like, the kids have like a giant, I guess the kids have an adjoining room, a playroom that's connected to their bedroom, and as she walks back into their bedroom, she looks up, and it's where we get the first view of the killer. And I'm okay with like not seeing the killer, like that whole shtick. We don't see the killer's face until the last second of the movie. But
I'm okay with that too.
So she walks out of the playroom, she walks into the bedroom, and she looks up, and there's like a rafter, which is weird.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand what that fucking thing is. Like, and how he's on like this ledge above the bedroom, looking down at the children. I assume that he was there looking at the children the entire time. And kids woke up, saw him, and freaked the fuck out. and went to go fucking hide.
I'm gonna say okay. Because again, I'm gonna overthink it and be like, I don't like it. Because it's just like, what? Or did they get scared
because the power went out?
Maybe.
Because the power goes out right before that. And then when she finds the kids, the power could. Yeah, exactly.
So maybe that's you're right. I'm just trying to think, because I was just like looking at that scene where he is standing on like the rafters.
What is that?
It makes you kind of think like,
what the fuck is
that? Is their bedroom part of the atrium? Like, what's going on? Like, what? I don't know.
Well, we know that their playroom is part of the atrium, because now the killer comes down from the rafters, tries to get into the playroom. She's fortifying the door. She tells the kids to go. These kids have no fucking lines. They don't say a goddamn fucking thing.
They're scared. They're crying.
They're crying. That's as good as they do. And apparently there's like a little window that goes out into the atrium. They climb down the tree, and then Jill follows them down there. And this is like that other part.
This is the best part you were talking about with the censored lights.
Well, no, this is not. No, I didn't like this part because like.
Oh, you didn't like the censored lights?
No, this part I think sucked because she doesn't move. Because yes, it's great that the censored lights are going on and off around the house, and she's watching them literally in the center of the house, but she doesn't react. Yeah,
because she's an idiot. Yeah. So maybe that's why I was like, I expect nothing from this woman.
Yeah.
I kind of was hoping for all of them to die.
That would have been fine. That would have been a nice turn. What would that have been okay with the PG-13 movie if they would have died off screen? Yeah. Then we get another false scare where like we're following the censored lights going off and on inside the house. And then we find out it's the cat. She turns around and the killer's right behind her, not setting off any of the lights, which is
right.
Great with serial killer rules, censored lights don't work on killers.
Yeah.
Because
serial killer rules, they're ghosts. They have no lights.
Like it happened in Halloween, the remake.
Yes,
2020,
it did.
Which the censored lights, like Michael doesn't set off any of the censored lights, is great.
Love it.
I mean, it's okay too. Like the killer's stalking her. She tells the kids to like hide in the fucking corner of the atrium.
Pushes them through one of the windows. But you're right, they're hiding at first before she pushes them through one of like the windows.
Yeah, she.
But again,
that doesn't happen.
She's such a moron because she's trapped herself inside of the atrium because they spent so much money on this atrium with the birds and the koi pins. So they're like, you know what? We really got to make this a scene.
Well, I guess these birds need to be locked in because there's a lock on this atrium door, and it's locked from the outside, which is weird.
Yeah, which is very strange. Yeah. But while she's like, because she hides the kids, and then she takes a dip in this koi pond, which is where we find Rose's body. So we finally get that confirmation that he killed her and threw her in the koi pond. Nice koi fish, real koi fish.
Yeah, there's only 5 kills in this movie, and they're all off screen. Well, this whole tension scene with her like in the koi pond, watching the killer walk around, like nothing. It's only so the kids can get out.
And yes, right. So, and she motions for them. She's like, get out. So they start walking, but then the kids hit the rocks and he hears it. And he turns around. He's like, there are the kids. Kids bolt for the front door. Kids can't reach the front door because it's locked and they're too little. Nobody does anything. The killer does not go after the kids. She doesn't do anything. She doesn't rush out of there to maybe help. She stands there. And then that's when these two have like, they start battling finally.
Yeah, it starts out with like her underneath the bridge and he's like trying to grab at one end and grabbing like she's barely able to avoid him or whatever the fuck. And then she turns over the bridge and he falls into the water and it becomes a slow motion chase. And like these kids trying to go for the lock, like at the top of the door. I'm just like, really?
Yeah.
Really? Like you kids, you really know you're not going to be able to reach it. Just like,
yeah. Try something else. Go somewhere else. This house is full of fucking windows. Break something.
So she's barely able to escape the atrium with him hot on her tail, and her hair gets caught in the fucking door, right? And she is able to pull out her own hair, run for the kids, but now the kids are no longer at the fucking door. For some reason, the kids decided to all of a sudden just hide. Disappear. Yeah, just hide. Like, they were there 1 second before, and now they are completely, they decided to fucking hide. And she goes all over the fucking house. I mean, it is a pretty decent setup. She goes
also over. I like how she just calls them kids. Like, these kids don't have names. They were never given names. Kids.
They have no names, and they have no speaking parts.
You couldn't even fucking call them Billy and Sasha. No.
Dude, nothing.
Nothing.
It actually is, like, it is a one steady shot, though, where she goes in looking for the kids, and then she finds them in the fireplace for some fucking reason, which is
nuts. Yeah, they hid in the fireplace.
Yeah.
Yeah, kids, you just, an accidental light switch will turn that motherfucker on.
Yeah.
You know it's electric. Look at this house.
Oh, my God. That would have been great, too, if the kids got caught on fire.
Yeah, the killer just was like, whoomp,
sets by accident. Oh, like, it would have been her fault. That would have been amazing.
Once again, we just start writing our own movie.
Yeah, I mean, it is a decent setup because, like, so she walks through, like, she does the whole one shot going through the house, then realize, like, the killer isn't banging on the atrium doors anymore. And then there's birds all over the place because, as you know, Courtney, every atrium has a secret window that opens up at the bottom left.
Yes. Bottom left. In every single atrium.
I don't know how you knew about it.
Look it up. Don't look it up.
Look it up. I mean, it is a nice, it's a nice little pause. That's all you get. She finds the kids inside the fireplace. The kids make it out.
Yeah, she pushes them out. She gets them out of the front door. So the kids are safe.
Yeah. And then a battle ensues. You know,
and they battle some more.
Isn't even the best battle. Like,
no, it
she
sucks.
Can barely be called a final girl.
I agree with you. I wrote that down because I was like, I know she's supposed to be our final girl, but I'm not happy with it.
Yeah, it lacked a little imagination. It's a lot of fighting on the stairs. They end up in front of the fireplace. She breaks a bottle of fucking tequila.
He's like, he just like gently has his arms around her neck and she's just sort of reaching for things.
Oh yeah. It doesn't look like she's getting strangled.
Like, there's that one point where it doesn't even look like he's trying.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention.
I know. Trust me. There were moments where I also was like, oh wow, birds outside. I should get an atrium.
Oh, I see a little bit. Yeah, I guess I could sort of tell that he's not really putting his whole weight behind her neck like you're supposed to when you're strangling somebody
into trying to murder her.
So a big fucking firebomb goes off inside the fucking living room. She grabs the poker, stabs him through the hand, essentially nailing him to the floor. And he's freaking the fuck out. She runs outside the door and comes across the cops. And that is the fucking movie. She just barely survives.
Barely.
She doesn't even give him like a good hit or any, like, no good punches to the face.
No, just like stab in the hand. And then she's just sitting outside with the EMT and she's talking to fucking Pam's shitty husband or fiance.
Pam's shitty husband.
And, he goes on to tell her, like, don't worry, he's handcuffed and ankle cuffed in the back of that car, and there's two cop cars, and then there's gonna be four cops on him. And she's like, that's not enough.
Yeah, he's full it's of enough. Tranquilizers. That's it's enough. Fine. Yeah, it's fine. Which, I mean, a good setup would have been that Pam's bad husband tells her that he's going to the hospital, and that's where she ends up in the next scene. Perfect setup for another
yes!
movie. You know? Oh, fucking a la Halloween Part 2, the OG one.
Yes.
Oh, my God. They're both in the same hospital.
Absolutely. And then at the end, like you said, you do get like your few five seconds of this guy's face. And he has the gnarly scar because he's a bad looking dude.
That's his scar. That's his real. That's his, like, his thing. Like his.
Oh, yeah. That's his look. Like that's his actual scar. I don't know how the story.
I'm sure we can look it up.
But that is his real scar. Yeah. But, I'm sure he's told it many times. But like you said in the beginning, like that is his go to. That's his look. He's a bad guy.
Being a bad
making person. That money off being that guy, good for him. But yeah, and then we just she wakes up in the hospital.
He wakes up in the hospital.
Some serious trauma, which
whole,
you would
whole false lead that the killer's inside her room. Then she really wakes up, you know, and then then the movie really ends as her, she's being restrained. But yeah,
that's fucking it, you guys. That's it.
We made this movie sound way better than it actually was.
We did. So just listen to this. Don't watch it.
Don't watch that fucking movie.
As horror fans, just don't do it.
That's fine.
Being honest.
I recommend watching the original. I recommend.
Yes.
You know, 100%. The original is a really disturbing fucking view at somebody who's very unstable.
Right. This one, I'm giving it like a 2. I'm giving it a 2.
Yeah, that is fine. Two phone calls. I'm not calling back.
Two phone calls before you just go, you know what? I'm going to go home. That's what you do. Just everyone in this movie is dumb.
We went into this thinking it was going to be, we thought this movie was going to be better than it was.
We
like
did.
Even out of 50, like we were hoping for 50%. We hoped to pull more things out of this movie so we could talk about. But no.
No. Yeah. Do I have anything else to say? Let me see. No. That's it. We did. We made it sound a lot better. We try to give it the praises where it deserved, and I think we did. Because there was some good things, but I don't recommend watching it. It's so boring.
Yeah. So that's that, guys. We'll see you on the flippy flop. Have a good one. Talk to you guys later. Follow us on all the socials and stuff. TikTok's doing great. Instagram.
Yes, thank you guys so much for the support. Honestly, we are digging it. We like talking to all you guys. It's so much fun. We're here.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
All right, bye.